this is installment number three of our issues of hashkafa that affect halacha. It's a little bit dangerous territory because, you know, I have like Rav Shechter ringing in my ears that he always says that if, you know, emunas chachamim means that you believe that the chachamim, when they give their piskei halacha, that an honest to goodness talmid chacham, when he gives his psak halacha, is not influenced by external factors and it's with complete integrity. So just to be clear, I'm not suggesting that it's a lack of integrity in any of these things. I'm suggesting that a posek obviously is going to pass them partial. There are certain issues in halacha that are partially impacted by the way you look at the world, by the way you interpret the metzias around you, and not always. I mean, sometimes it's only impacted by the way you look at a sugya, but sometimes it's impacted by the way you look at the world. And I think that's fair to say. I don't think it's a terrible thing to say. So we discussed already hashkafa, halacha that's affected by hashkafa as far as the Medina is concerned, as far as Medina Israel is concerned. We've discussed as far as society is concerned, feminism and smartphones and secular knowledge and things like that, right? We did all that. So today I want to talk a little bit about issues relating to Torah and Chazal. So for example, could Chazal have been incorrect about a scientific fact, right? Meaning when Chazal tell us some scientific ideas, do we assume that they're working with the best science of the times that they lived in? They're working with the best available knowledge? Or do we assume that they are not working with the best scientific knowledge, they're working with Ruach HaKodesh? And therefore, they're perfect in their knowledge of everything, including their knowledge of medicine and their knowledge of science. And any discrepancy between what scientists know today and what science and what Chazal tell us is the real science has to be dealt with. Meaning, either by saying that the scientists of today are a bunch of apikorsim and they don't know what they're talking about and they just haven't yet discovered that Chazal are correct, or they do know and they're hiding that information, whatever, depending how suspicious you are, how much of a conspiracy theorist you are, but or by saying that no, they're talking about two different things. Chazal meant something else. You know, those kinds of answers. You know, the alternative would be if you have the hashkafa that Chazal could be wrong about science, then you would say, yeah, they were dealing with the best available science of their time. In fact, my father-in-law pointed out that that one of the rayas that they bring in, one of the Kiruv organizations for the Ruach HaKodesh involved in the Torah, is that when they set up the calendar, when Chazal set up the calendar, they were accurate to I think 6 decimal places or 4 decimal places in terms of the length of a month. What? Yeah, the 793 chalakim, 29 days, 12 hours, 793 chalakim, 793 out of what, 1,080, I think it is, right? So they were accurate to I forgot how many decimal places it was, but like a remarkable level of accuracy. Said, oh, this is a raya that they had Ruach HaKodesh. So my father-in-law, who's a big expert in calendars, said that's apikorsis. That's a strong statement. So why is that apikorsis? He said, because if you're going to say they were working with the best mathematical and scientific knowledge of the time that was available to them, so then it's remarkable. They were so educated that they were able to figure it out so close to accurate, you know, to 4 decimal places, but not to 6. They were 2 decimal places off or something like that, right, that they were so accurate. But if you say that it's the Ribbono Shel Olam that put the idea in their heads, you're saying that the Ribbono Shel Olam was off by 2 decimal places, right? And that's apikorsis, meaning to say that it's this Ruach HaKodesh, and the Ruach HaKodesh was off, that it was wrong. So that's highly problematic. Now, when it comes to Tanakh, we assume that that definitely is B'nevua B'Ruach HaKodesh, Nevi'im versus Ksuvim. Maybe that may be one of the differences, or one of the potential differences between Nevi'im and Ksuvim. But Tanakh certainly, we assume, emanates from the Ribbono Shel Olam, and scientific statements in Tanakh have to be correct. Right, because that comes from the Creator Himself. That comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, or even mathematical statements. So that's why Chazal go out of their way that when the Navi describes the Yam Shel Shlomo, right, it describes Shlomo Melech's mikvah, swimming pool. I don't know, depending on what type of community he lived in. But when it describes the circumference of the circular pool and the diameter, so it describes a 3-to-1 ratio, right, which is can't possibly be true, because if it was really a circle, then we know it's 3.14 and whatever. You can go hundreds of decimal places and we still, whatever, however many decimal places it is. But Chazal was not even close. Three? So what did Chazal do with that? So what Chazal said, not that the Tanakh didn't know the math. First of all, it's pretty elementary. Meaning, you could do an experiment very easily with a circle and a string and see that the diameter is, that it's not a 3-to-1 ratio. The circumference of the diameter is not a 3-to-1 ratio. So it's it wouldn't be that hard for them to figure that out. But what Chazal says is that you see from here that pi equals 3. And the Achronim explained, and Shlomo and others, I think Shlomo and Vilna, and others explain that we, the Aruch HaShulchan, that what Chazal are telling us is that you're allowed to estimate pi as 3. Meaning that lahalacha, that it, when you're figuring these calculations out, since you're never going to get pi exactly anyway, how close do you have to be to exact? You're allowed to estimate in your calculations as 3. There's a Vilna Gaon that has a beautiful remez to this, where the Vilna Gaon points out that when it describes the diameter of the Am Shel Shlomo, there's a Korean Ksiv. The Navi says Kav, Kuf Vav, but the Ksiv is Kuf Vav He. Right? So the Gra says, the Gematria of Kuf Vav 106, the Gematria of Kuf Vav He is 111. 111 over 106 equals X over 3, solve for X, X is 3.14, I think it's pi to 4 digits. Meaning, so there's a remez in the pasuk itself that, of course, the pasuk knows when pi is. You're going to tell me it's not good because it's only the 4 digits, it's not all the way. No, but the point is that the remez in the Kriyat Ksiv to the idea that, of course, the Navi knew that pi was not exactly 3. That's not something that's even debatable. What's debatable is, what did Chazal know? So if you ever read Rabbi Meiselman's book on science and Torah, and you read Rabbi Slivkin's book on science and Torah, they have very different points of view on this this issue. Rabbi Meiselman thinks that it's an absolute certainty that Chazal knew every last detail of science and that and scientific facts, and they can never have been wrong about it, because Divrei Chazal are never empty, and that in fact is what Rabbi Moshe Shapira believed as well. He presented the Shita of the Maharal in that way, because what Chazal say, whenever they say anything, there's so much depth to every comment that they say, that there's so many layers of meaning, that even on the, if on the Pashut level it doesn't seem to be correct, but it's correct on so many other levels that it's impossible that they were missing some basic information. Whereas others point out, and the others include the Maram Shik and the Chassam Sofer, others point out that they believe that Chazal were working simply with the best science of their time. Rav Shachter pointed out that when he saw Rabbi Meiselman's book, Rabbi Meiselman said that anyone who doesn't believe that Chazal had Ruach HaKodesh in terms of their understanding of science is an apikores. So Rav Shachter said, so I'm an apikores, but I'm in good company, because so is the Chassam Sofer. So he felt like he was okay in terms of that. So where does this matter la halacha, other than, like we said in the first shiur, about like defining who's an apikores, right? Who you're allowed to call as an apikores. It's interesting, I was listening to Rabbi Breidowitz Shlita talk about this topic. You know who Rabbi Breidowitz is? From Ar Sameach? He's a big Talmud Chacham. Breidowitz? Big Talmud Chacham. He happens to have a lot of scientific knowledge as well. He was talking about this topic. He said, you have to understand that when you see the word apikores or whatever, it's clearly most of the time in modern language, in certain circles, that's just used to express that you're adamant about it. It's just a way of putting an exclamation point at the end of a sentence, meaning they don't actually hold that someone is an apikores. It's just a way of saying, in a more emphatic way, whatever the point it is that they're trying to, for better or for worse, whatever point it is that they're trying to get across. So where does this matter in halacha? So for years, scientists believed in spontaneous generation until someone by the name of Louis Pasteur, I think, right? Didn't Louis Pasteur? Am I wrong about that? I don't know anything. So Louis Pasteur disproved the theory in the late 19th century of spontaneous generation, no? And that the Gemara seems to assume that there is such a thing as spontaneous generation. What is spontaneous generation? that a creature could just come into being on its own. Right, so we'll get there. So first, two places in the Gemara. First is about worms and fish. Right, the Gemara says that worms that grow in the flesh of the fish are kosher, only if it came from outside the flesh of the fish. It came from outside and then embedded itself into the, only those are not kosher. So this became a very big issue lahalacha a couple of years ago when they discovered certain worms in salmon. So they come into the fish when they're microscopic, but they weren't created in the fish. They weren't spontaneously generated in the fish. So how do you interpret that? Some would say, Chazal said, only worms that are spontaneously generated in the fish are kosher. These are not. These are from the outside. So this is not. This does not fall into the heter of Chazal, right? And that's a reasonable approach. Aye, but there is no such thing as spontaneous generation. It's been disproven. There is no worm that's spontaneously generated in the fish. Well, maybe none that we know of, but maybe in the times of Chazal there were. And maybe we just don't, we've never seen spontaneous generation, but maybe it exists. And maybe Chazal were talking about different worms. V'od yesh lomer, another possibility. Chazal were talking about the same worms. And Chazal passed in the halacha that these are mutter. Why are they mutter? Because they seem to be spontaneously generated. Maybe you could say that even if Chazal are wrong about science, they're never ever wrong about halacha. And therefore, even though what seemed to be the basis of their psak was faulty science, there's always more to the psak of Chazal than meets the eye. So it seemed to have been faulty science, but there are a lot more bases for their psak. Or put in a different way, the way Rabbi Breidowitz Shlita put it, was that if you... we assume that great poskim have a certain sense of siyata dishmaya in getting the correct psak, even if their way of getting there is not correct. And he quoted the famous maisa that Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was a gadol adar, and yet Reb Chaim Soloveitchik didn't like to paskin his own shailas, and that's what Reb Simcha Zelig, the dayan, he Reb Breinowitz quoted that he used to send Reb Yitzchak Elchanan. The way I always heard it, from my rebbein was that Reb Simcha Zelig, the dayan in Brisk, was the posek that Reb Chaim referred all of his shailas to. So he would send a shaila and he would say to him, give me a tshuva, but no explanation. If you give me an explanation, then I'll be able to argue with everything you say, but give me a tshuva. Oh, well, how can you accept his tshuva if you think that his explanations are all going to be wrong? If you're going to be able to argue with all of his explanations? I mean, how is that honest? How you let it? No, because give me a tshuva because I believe you have siyata d'shmaya. You're the dayan, you're the posek, and you have siyata d'shmaya. My father-in-law told me that he believes that he's seen this in a number of instances in tshuvas relating to Zman, in particular in Rav Moshe Feinstein's tshuvas, that there are certain errors Rav Moshe makes in his understanding of the science, and yet, lahalacha, he always comes out on the right side. He said that you could see certain times a posek has a siyata d'shmaya at arriving at the right thing, even if the basis, so it could be that the basis of Chazal's psak, as they described it, was faulty science, but they were Chazal. And therefore the halacha is not going to change. A more extreme view might be that now that we know better, the halacha changes. And therefore we have to be more machnia, meaning it turns out that a fish, if you're going to have this extreme liberal view of Chazal and science, you're going to have an extremely machmir view of whether you're allowed to eat salmon. Right? Meaning if you're very liberal about Chazal and science, you say, oh, Chazal were mistaken, and what that, all they told us to halacha is that spontaneously generated worms are mutter, but anything that's not spontaneously generated is usser. So now, these are the same worms Chazal were talking about, but we know now that they're not spontaneously generated, and therefore, they're usser. It's changing Chazal's halacha. That's it's much more machmir, on the more machmir direction. That doesn't seem to be particularly reasonable. Rabelsky held that there's no such thing as a worm being born from the flesh of the fish, obviously. They all come from the outside, but Chazal tell us that if it's found in the flesh of the fish, it's mutter, because it's considered part of the fish, even though it was generated from the outside. I think the way Rav Shach explained it is that since when it comes into the fish, it's microscopic, you can't see it, the human eye can't even see it as a meaningful organism, Therefore, it's halachically considered as if it's spontaneously generated, as if it was created entirely within the inside of the fish. The halacha is also lice are allowed to be killed on Shabbos. Why? Because the Gemara explains they're not created from mating of a male and a female. The way the Rishonim understands that they're spontaneously generated. So many explain the Gemara that the reason why lice can be killed is that they're so small and unrecognizable that they're viewed as if they're not even there. I mean, again, the similar idea that because they are not recognizable to the human eye, that would make it ki'ilu, they don't exist, and only when they grow a little bit, so then it looks like they're being spontaneously generated. So again, how you view the hashkafa will depend on how you view the halacha. I'll give you another example. Metzitza b'peh. So what's metzitza b'peh all about? The Gemara says in Masech Shabbos, Perkel Lozer D'Mila, that one of the critical steps of a bris mila, Gemara Shabbos Kuflam and Gimel, is that one has to, the mo'el should suction with his mouth some blood from the wound right away. Why? So the Gemara is clear that it's purely for health reasons. What about nowadays where it doesn't seem that there's any health advantage, and adaraba, there could be health disadvantages, significant ones. If a mo'el has hepatitis, and there are many, many adults that are that are carrying hepatitis, and the baby obviously has a very underdeveloped immune system and can really be hurt badly from metzitza b'peh. So what do you do? Do you say that Chazal were clearly interested in our health? They were wrong about what is and is not healthy over here, and therefore we should do what is in fact most healthy? Or do you say, no, Chazal could have never been wrong about health, and just because we think it's dangerous, no, Chazal knew better, and therefore it is not at all dangerous? Or do you try to satisfy both, right? Do you say, look, Chazal knew everything, and therefore there must be some good reason for metzitza. But at the same time, I'm not going to do something that I know to be a risk to the baby right now. So you have all three approaches, right? Some would say, well, why bother with metzitza at all? Don't do it. Very few people don't do anything as far as metzitza. I don't know of many mo'elim that don't do anything. But some would say, if Chazal said metzitza b'peh, it's got to be b'peh mamish. You know, my brother is a mo'el. He trained in Eretz Yisrael. And he said, Maishala would do, when Maishala has the right to do the Brisim and Shari Tzedek, so sometimes they'll have Arab babies. He'd do Metzitza Ben and Arab babies. It doesn't even make any sense that you would do Metzitza Ben. He just holds that Metzitza is part of the Mila. That's how you do it. See, it strikes me as dangerous to do, you don't know where these babies have been. Rabbi Pesach Kron told me that in the 1980s, when AIDS became a significant scare, Rabbi Kron does milas for anybody, you know, for people from all sorts of communities, from all sorts of places. And certainly in our day and age, even sometimes you have people who look like religious, you know, families and wonderful B'nai Torah, whatever. You don't know where people have been, and you don't know what people have been exposed to. I was just listening to the Headlines show this week, because my friend, I listen to it often now when I'm driving, and Rabbi Ari Wasserman was the host this week. It was about women in the workplace. So we interviewed my wife's friend, Elisheva Liss, who's a marriage therapist, and she was describing the situations that she faces. I mean, it's pachat pachad, man. It's so crazy, the things that she faces, that she sees. And she was talking about infidelity, and does it start in the workplace sometimes, and what sort of gedarim and things like that. And she says, you know, sometimes yichud, being extra careful about yichud and negiyah and all these things doesn't help, because very often the infidelity is with someone of the same gender. So, you know, people who appear like B'nai Torah and wonderful and whatever, You don't know where people have been. You don't know. So Rabbi Kron was nervous. I'm going to do a metzitza on these babies. I don't know what I'm getting. Not to protect the baby, to protect himself. So he said, he asked Rav David Cohn. At the time, Rav David Cohn told him to use a tube, to use like a straw to do the metzitza. And that way, he's not going to suck in the blood into his mouth, but it'll still be mekayim metzitza by sucking the blood out. And that's what many mo'elim are makbid to do. I had a case in my shul where one of the founding members of the shul, a good friend of ours, very chashuva person, had a son. After several daughters, he had his first son, and at the bris, his father, who happens to be a surgeon, got wind of the fact that the mo'el was going to do metzitza b'peh And the father came over to me. The bris was in the Young Israel of Widmir. And the father came over to me and he said, my grandson will not have Matisse of Pe. You better do something about this right now. So I went over to the mall. I said, would you mind using a tube? Would you mind using it? So he said, yeah, sure, no problem. All you have to do is ask. But if you don't ask, that's what he was going to do. He was going to do Matisse of Pe. But Chasidim, Yahari Gal Yavar. Right, you got to do mitzvah of the pet. It's an absolute. Rav Shachter writes, I think in Nefesh HaRav, Rav Soloveitchik was a sandik once, and the mole wanted to do mitzvah, and Rav Soloveitchik said, "I'm much more tolerant than my father is. My father would never tolerate this. He never would have allowed this. But you know, I'm more tolerant. I understand you're a chassid shemayel. You have your own minhagim, so I'm more tolerant. I'll allow it. I don't know if he must have not thought that it was actually dangerous. I don't know."
Two questions. One, was there no such thing as either hepatitis or AIDS or any blood-related diseases in the time of Chazal?
They probably didn't realize how these things were transmitted. Yeah.
And what was the health benefit in those days to doing Matisse of Pe?
Yeah, their understanding was getting that initial blood out quickly was helpful. I don't know why or how. Truth is, this goes back a long time ago. This is not a 20th century issue. In the 19th century, there were Gedolim that discussed this issue. In 1831, someone published that there's no longer therapeutic value, and the Chassam Sofer in a Tshuva, that was only published in a journal, wasn't published in Shuvah Chaim Sofer, says it's not really a critical part of meal, it's really only for health. So reliable medicine is that you can squeeze out blood with gauze, so do it with gauze, you don't need to do metzitza. The reform, of course, picked up on that. Ooh, what else can we change, right? You know, if you let it, the Tiferes Yisrael, the Mishnais, defended Matzitza B'Peh. Hungarian Rabbanim wrote a letter that it's an absolute must. Kabbalistically, Matzitza B'Peh is an inherent part of the bris. The Avnei Nezer said, do it, Shom Psoim Hashem, that you do things properly, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will protect you. Most contemporary poskim hold that you're allowed to use a tube. In Eretz Yisrael, that's just the way they do it. They only do it with Matzitza B'Peh, at least the more Haredi Ma'olim, I'm not sure about, in the Dati Lumi community. So that's, again, another, depending how you interpret the science. Another area where that relates to Torah and Hashkafa toward Torah is how to balance Kabbalah and Halacha, meaning what's your Hashkafa toward Kabbalah? Meaning, not what's your Hashkafa toward Kabbalah. I'm not going to get into those who deny the Kabbalah and its value, and but to what extent should it have an effect on Halacha? Right, that's the issue. To what extent should Kabbalah affect, meaning how much of a part of your Chaye Yom Yom is it? And how much is it a hidden area of wisdom that is so important to the Jewish people, but is reserved for the select few and shouldn't affect our Chaye Yom Yom? And, I'm not the Baba Sali, and therefore I don't do all my Hanhagos, I'll be Kabbalah. Or to what extent do you say that? Kabbalah is like this broader wisdom, and therefore it should affect everything that I do. And if the Kabbalah says that you're supposed to do, I was just reading Rabbi Bamberger's new book. You saw Rabbi Bamberger's new book? Unbelievable. It's so beautiful. He published with Art School. He didn't do like the big coffee table style this time. Great Jewish photographs. He has 100 pictures here with stories by each picture. It's much amazing. They still didn't let him put in Rav Soloveitchik. He tried, but every time Art School says no. But okay, no. So he snuck in the Lubavitcher Rebbe for the first time. In all of his books, he tried to sneak in Rav Soloveitchik and Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they always,
Why did they push him away? Because he doesn't. Rav Soloveitchik didn't let.
They don't like Rosalvich. He snuck in the Lubavitcher Rebbe under the guise of the Friedeker Rebbe. He had a picture of the Friedeker Rebbe, and Rav Menachem Mendel's son-in-law is right near him. So that's how he snuck in. He got him in there. But anyway, why am I mentioning this? Not to talk about the politics. We don't need that for now. Maybe we could have a different shiur about politics and halacha. But in here, he has a picture of the Baba Sali pouring cognac or whatever alcoholic beverage he used to give to people. So and they say that when it ran out, when the bottle was empty, he would put a napkin over it, take the napkin off, and then keep pouring. The Baba Sali was about my face. He was an incredible magician. He was his part of his Chaye Yom Yom. Everyone saw it. It was just something that he did. So So one might argue, yeah, for people like that, you know, all their hanagos should be LP Kabbalah. But no matter how many times I put my napkin over my bottle of wine, nothing happens. So maybe my hanagos should be more LP halacha, straight halacha. So this is a discussion that Beis Yosef writes that in the Tosefta, writes, Yachl ye mashmiya kol ha'oznav, that when you're davening, you should be mashmiya kol ha'oznav, that you should hear what you're saying. Because the pasuk says, Bechana vihim medaber saliba rak svasel nos v'kol ha'lo yishama. The mashmos of Talmud Bavli is that when you are davening, you should daven loudly enough that you hear it. And that's what we pass on the Shulchan Aruch. You should daven loudly enough that you could hear it with your own ears. Shmon Esrei. Not loudly enough that anybody else could hear it, but loudly enough that you can hear it. But from the Tosefta, it sounds not that way. But forget about the Tosefta. The Zohar in Parshas Vayakel writes, like the Tosefta. So those who are knowing more Alpi Kabbalah will typically daven the Shmon Esrei in a way that they can't hear it with their own voice. In the Kisvei Reb Chaim Vital, he says the Minhag HaRizal was to daven belachash legamri, without being mashmiya kol at all. And the Shara Kavana says gam me'olam lo espalel tfilas b'kol ram, that the HaRizal never daven b'kol ram afilu seder ha'tfila shel miyushav kegon azmiros v'chiyotzimam, even psukei zimra he didn't say b'kol ram lahoros hachno'a ve'ema v'yiru l'fnei Hashem yizbarach, to show a sense of submission. But he would allow some audible sounds to escape his lips on Shabbos during Pesukat Zimra. And even then, it was only because of Kavod Shabbos that he would allow that to happen. So the Arizal was very machmir not to be magbia kolo at all, even in Pesukat Zimra, similar to the Zohar Kadosh, other than Shabbos. And Mechaber writes in Simur Kof Aleph Sif Beis, Lo yispalel b'libo levad, el mechatech hadvar mesvasov, u mashmiya la'oznav b'lachash, v'lo yashmiya kolo. Don't let other people hear it, but you should hear it yourself. Like the Yerushalmi and the Tur and the Rashba, that you need to be mashmiya la'oznav, and against the Tosefta and the Zohar. So the Mishnah Berurah points out, in Sifkan Hei, v'yesh ha'kasvu, t'tzarech lachash l'dibrei ha'zohar. That some say that you should be choshesh for the Zohar, shaf l'chachila lo yishmiya la'aznav. That even l'chachila you shouldn't be mashmiya la'aznav. Aval Magen Avraham kasuv shein raya mei ha'zohar. Magen Avraham thinks it's a misinterpretation of the Zohar. Chen kasuv bir agra, da'aftas ha'zohar uka shulchan aruch. Bir agra thinks that the Zohar is like the shulchan aruch as well. V'chen kasuv shari achorim shetov yosu l'chachila sheyashmiya la'aznav. Mishmura says, not that we should reject the Zohar in favor of the halacha, but because we may be misinterpreting the Zohar. And many Gedolei Olam thought that even the Zohar said that you're supposed to be Mishmiya La'aznav. But B'dieved, he says Mishmiya L'kulei Alma, if you said it B'lachash to the point that you're not even Mishmiya La'aznav, Yotza. Because at least you were Motzi B'svasav. So two very important nekudos emerge from this. Number one, that it's not clear that the Zohar is cholik on the Yerushalmi and the Rashba. Could be that the Zohar is moda, that you should daven a little bit to be mashmiya la'aznav. And second, that it's not ma'akiv b'di'evet, that you yotzei tefila b'lachash l'gamri. Now, it's interesting, in the introduction to the tshuvos of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, he has a whole section, and it's kedai to read sometime, about the interplay between Kabbalah and Halacha. And he discusses how, he is very different than Rav Avadia Yosef's approach. Rav Avadia Yosef's approach was, Kabbalah is Kabbalah, Halacha is Halacha, never the twain shall meet. Right? Like the Chassam Sofer has such a lashon that it's like klayim to mix Kabbalah and Halacha. So Rav Moshe Weinberger Taina is that Chassam Sofer is taken totally out of context. And that absolutely, the Chassam Sofer and every other tshuva does mix Kabbalah and Halacha. You know, that Rav Moshe Weinberger told me once that when I said to him, why are we so encouraging of being engaged in Nistar? How many Gedolei Poskim said, Eini Esek B'Nistaros? And the Yehuda and others, Eini Esek B'Nistaros. So Rav Moshe Weinberger's line was, every single Posek who ever wrote Eini Esek B'Nistaros had significant Esek B'Nistaros. So I assume he has writers. But anyway, so in that hakdama to, I think it's the Chelek Beis of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu's Tshuvas, he says the idea that's very popular in Kabbalah, that be'ikfas de Mashicha, when it comes toward the end of days, that's when the Kabbalah plays much more of a major role, and those things that were previously nistar are brought out into the nigla, they're brought out into the open. And therefore, he says, there are many hanhagos that have developed over the years that are alpi Kabbalah, that have become mainstream in Klal Yisrael, and one such example he gives is davening quietly, davening Shemona Esrei, where you're not even mashmiya la'azno. That in a typical shul, most people are not being mashmiya the words ba'la'azno, and that's because Kabbalah has crept in and had its influence. One could argue that people don't know the halacha or don't say the words slowly enough to possibly say them all audibly, depending on what kind of shul you daven in. But that's what he suggests. Another area where Kabbalah and halacha intersect a little bit is when it comes to l'shem yichud, right? Should you say l'shem yichud before doing a mitzvah? So it's most popular by Sfiras HaOmer, but it is also before many other mitzvahs, hanachas tefillin, achilas matzah, lots of mitzvahs where people say l'shem yichud. So there's a famous tshuva that Rabbi Yehuda Yordeh, Madura Kamasim, and Tzadi Gimel, and in Tinyanasim and Kuv Zayin, where he so strongly rejects the idea of l'shem yichud. Someone asked him, someone had the, I guess, lack of preparation, didn't know, no one warned him, to ask the Rabbi Yehuda what pshat is in l'shem yichud, like to explain the meaning of l'shem yichud and what the exact nusach should be of l'shem yichud. So that means what the nusach should be? It should be no nusach. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. This is not something. He said, I looked in Bavli Yerushalmi Sifri Sifra Tosefta, and it doesn't appear anywhere. What, now in a few generations ago, people are going to pop up and say, oh, we know better, and we're going to say things that Chazal never heard of. He said, you know what people do this for? They do it to compensate for a general weakness in genuine Torah and Yerushalmi. Because of weakness in Torah and Yerushalmi, so they make up for it with these Kabbalistic practices that have no business. He said the real way to handle it is by being engaged in Torah Yerushalmi. That's a general comment, you know, about Rabbi Shai Shechter spoke in my shul on Shavuos. Spoke beautifully. One of the things that he was talking about was like the Segula culture. You know, the people are always, I heard alpi Kabbalah if you do this and that, you know, that. Even if it were true, and even if it did work, that's still not our avoda, right? They said Rav Eliashiv, when Rav Eliashiv had a great, great, great grandson, Rav Eliashiv lived long enough, and everyone in his family got married early enough because Ben Shmona Asur L'Chuppah, that he had not a great, great grandson, which is rare enough, right? My grandfather's 91, just had a great, great. Rav Nassim Kamenetsky just passed away, had a great, great grandson 2 days before he died. And the baby was named Nassim at his birth. But, right, you know, it's rare to see a great-great. Rav Eliashiv had a great-great-great grandson. And someone and they asked him to be Sandik. And he said, I'm not schlepping, I'm not going to go be Sandik. The bris was not going to be in Yerushalayim, I guess. And he didn't have the energy. So they said, no, but they found in some Kabbalah Sefer that if you're a Sandik at a great-great-great-grandson's bris, then you go straight to Olam Haba. He said, when I go to Olam Haba, I'm going in the front door. I'm not sneaking in through the back. That's not the way I'm going into Olam Haba. It's going to be straight through the front door. And that's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to go in the front door. It's not by pushing a button here or there or whatever, you know. That's the way it's supposed to be. So the Nodim Yidah says, Torah, Yerushamayim, not l'shem yichud. And he says, and that's the famous tshuva where he has that line, Yesharim darkei Hashem, tzadikim yelchubam, v'chasidim yikashlubam. And they had to change it. The printer actually was so embarrassed that he wrote v'chasidim yikashlubam, that he changed it to poshim yikashlubam. And the Yehuda got wind of that, and he said, oh, you see the difference between me and the public and the printer? I took poshim and I turned them into chasidim. He took chasidim and he turned them into poshim. Right? That was the line that they say. Tshuva Me'ava said that Tshuva Me'ava was a Talmud of Nadav Yehuda, but he wasn't so convinced that Nadav Yehuda was correct about this. He said the Shem Yichud existed 150 years before the Nadav Yehuda. It wasn't so new. And different reasons that are suggested for saying it, verbalizing that you're doing the mitzvah lishma, or fusing dibur machshav and maisa. Nadav Yehuda is not so swayed by that, because Dibur is accomplished with the Birchsa Mitzvah. You don't need to say L'Shem Yichud. That's what Birchsa Mitzvah, the Ritva writes. That's the purpose of Birchsa Mitzvah. But there are Kabbalistic reasons. Rabbi Yaakov Emden said that Chacham Svi did everything based on the Ariyah Kadosh, but he never said L'Shem Yichud, even though it's interesting, L'Shem Yichud is printed in the standard editions of Seder Yaivitz, because they just took a text of the Seder and they put it together with Rabbi Yaakov Emden's commentary. But the standard editions of Seder Yaivit didn't conform to what Rabbi Yaakov Emden actually held. The Chida claims that Rabbi Yaakov Emden made a mistake, and he says, Kivin de Balachal Ka'as, Balachal Taos, the Chida writes about Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that he got angry, and that's why he made a mistake. But part of this, much of this, is how much you believe Kabbalistic practices should affect what we do lahalacha. Another example of this, and this will be the last one about Kabbalah and halacha, tcheles bizman hazeh, right? Meaning if there's a mitzvah in the Torah that you have to wear tcheles in your tzitzis, and you believe, and again, there are reasons not to believe this, but if you believe that this is it, that we found it, we found the actual tcheles, so is the fact that the Arizal says that the tcheles is nigenas, and that tcheles was knowing only bizman shebesimun sheyakayim, and bizman hazeh we don't have the kalach to make the tikkunim that were done bizman shebesimun sheyakayim, is that enough reason to convince you not to wear tcheles, right? Not to do a mitzvah d'oraisa. Shulchan Aruch passed in the Simin Tesef Beis, tzitzis shel pishtim or shel tzemer rechelim peturim b'chol minei begadim, chutz mi shel pishtim l'tzemer or shel tzemer l'pishtim bizman hazeh. So the Gar writes, "Ayn medrash parsha shlach, va'achshav ein lanu ela lavan." Meaning the Gra holds that the Maimer Chazal that tchelis was nignaz is halacha lemaisa. In the Yeshua's Malko, he says that it's already huchsak etzol Yisrael more than 1,000 shana that nignaz had tchelis. So there is this idea, but the idea seems to be more al pi Kabbalah, that tcheles was nignaz, and tcheles can't be when there's no Beis HaMikdash, but how much are you going to allow that to affect your halach? At the expense of a mitzvah d'oraisa? You have a mitzvah d'oraisa to do, and you're going to say that the Kabbalah is going to take away? So Rav Shturmach writes in the Tshuva in Chelek Aleph Simen Chavav, that it's not mistaber that in our generation, she'ein hester kamohu, where there's no, we've never seen such a hester panim like an Arab, that all of a sudden yiskala hatcheles. You know, what's he assuming? That tcheles represents something major. It represents something that's very, very deep. And he says, we're in such a hester panim generation, where there's so much tumah in the world, now we're going to have a giloy of tcheles, which is a little bit difficult, to understand. Because what does the darkness of our gullus have anything to do with the chilazon? But the guy who edited my sefer pointed out that the ikir inyan of tchelus, that it's dumb l'rukia, is that through that we recognize this gullus of kvod Hashem. So bizman ha'amorayim, where they had this giloy of the kvod Hashem, so that's it makes sense to match with the tchelus. But when the giloy kvodo is behester, Toch Hester, when it's totally hidden from us, so we've lost the Tcheles, that which is all about the Giloy. That's the idea, basically, Al Pi Kabbalah. L'chora, one could argue, and Rabbi Sruli Barkin pointed out to me that one could argue that it's also not mistader, that in a Dor Shofel Kazeh, that in a lowly generation like this, we'd be zocha to the Or Torah, that Yisrabu Safsali Beis HaMedrash Kifle Kiflayim Yikmosh Ayu B'Doros HaKodnin, that Lakewood would have tens of thousands of people learning Torah. Well, in such a dark generation, we're going to be zocha to such things? Yeah. We don't know the dark Hashem. We're zocha to certain lights along the way. So it's difficult to know when yes, when no, but this is probably Tali and Hashkafa. How much are you going to allow the Kabbalah to determine what you're going to do la halacha? And one last point of intersect between Hashkafa and halacha, or impact, I guess, of Hashkafa on halacha. And that is, when Chazal make chazakos, when they say that something is true, do we assume that it is automatically always going to be true? Right? Chazakos is about human nature. We've discussed this semester, because we were learning El Metzias, right? Which chazaka of Chazal? That a person who loses cash, he must have already been miyayish. Why? Because other mashish bekiso. So the Mishnah gives an example of yayish, says that if you find mos with the zaros, we assume there must have been yayish. So the Gemara asks, if you hold like Abaye, that yayish lomidas lovi yayish, maybe the guy doesn't know that he lost it. So the Gemara says, based on Rabbi Yitzchak, that adam asir the mashish bekiso bekol sha'a, that a person is always checking his pocket, so there's no way that he lost money and isn't aware of it. You can assume that he knows he lost the money. So the Pe'er Ador, they say that Chaznish was asked, that nowadays people don't check their money. Now, my wife all the time asks me, if the cleaning lady's coming or something, say, do you have any cash on you? Or she needs to pay for a kid's lunch or something, do you have any cash on you? I don't know. So I take out my wallet and I look. Or I say, I think so. How much cash? I don't know. I have no idea. I never know how much cash I have on me. People don't do that anymore. They don't check for cash all the time. So it just happened to me this morning. It turned out it was $57, which is way more than I ever carry with me. normally it's maybe a dollar for a mashulach or something, but whatever. But anyway, so does the din still apply? They asked the Chazon Ish. People don't check. So the Chazon Ish says, once the Chacham decide, the Umdana, that they apply Hefker Beis and Hefker, and even if the Umdana is no longer the reality. So first I thought that this meant that Chazon Ish held, the Chazak is always true. Any Chazak of Chazal is always true. But that's the Ashkafa. Right? In which case, it's Chaps and Aftamil Alech, or Shech explains to me, it's not what the Chazon Ish meant. He understood that the Chazak is not true anymore, but he was saying that they set up the Alech in such a way that they utilized Hefker based in Hefker in this way. Rav Shach would question the whole story. Who says that the din wouldn't change based on the reality? Who says that they utilized Hefker based in Hefker in this way? And that they made it automatic, that you're allowed to keep the money? In 30 straight blot of Maseches Nedarim, the Meiri writes that all of the halachos that it says in the Gemara don't apply anymore. Because what's the number one rule in Nedarim? B'Nedarim, halach achar, what? Lashon b'nei Adam. Right? We always just follow the way people talk. So if people meant one thing, so the Gemara was assuming that people meant one thing, but people don't mean that anymore. So that's difficult to understand. The more famous chazaka that was suggested cannot change is the chazaka of Tav L'Mesav Tandu Min L'Mesav Armelu. That the Gemara assumes that a woman would rather be married to anybody than to not be married, meaning she would marry beneath her station. She would marry beneath her rather than not be married, which is proven every day by my wife and many, many others, that women are typically willing to settle on people who are beneath them. So there was a rabbi, Rabbi Rachman, who wanted to suggest that chazaka no longer applies and use that to help solve the aguna problem. We'll leave out all the details of how he was going to use that. Everything was a kiddush etos because she never would have gotten married had she known that the husband was not going to be as upstanding a citizen as she would have liked him to be. So everything is a kiddush etos. So Rav Soloveitchik gave a famous drasha at an RCA convention. He gave a famous drasha where he said that it's you absolutely cannot say that. You cannot say that the chazak of chazal changed. This is something that's basic to human nature. And I might as well, he said, stop teaching all of Yevamos, Gittin, and Kiddushin, if all of the and Hefek Subas, if this was true. Right? He was absolutely adamant about it, and he said it in such a passionate way. I tried to look online to get a text of the speech. I couldn't find it. I'm hoping maybe someone will listen to this year and has a text of the speech and will send it to me. Because I remember having a text of the speech. I've definitely seen it. I couldn't find it easily online. So the question, what was that?
You can give your email.
Actually, no, people have my email, they'll find. So the question is that true of every chazaka of chazal? So, there are a lot of chazakas in the Gemara that poskim say are no longer true. The chazaka that a woman wouldn't be so bold as to declare in her husband's presence that he had divorced her unless it was actually true. But the Rama in Ebenezer Simon Yud Zayin says that nowadays, when there's so much chutzpah and pritzus in the world, that chazaka is no longer true. But it's a chazaka in chazal. What do you mean? How could it be changed? So Shapta explains that most people misunderstood what Rav Soloveitchik meant. That not that all chazakas of chazal have to be true, But when a chazal make a chazaka that's totally in Maisa Bereshis, meaning that they're describing the Bria, they're describing how a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the Elisha, what's the passage? Shukaseich, right? The Elishech Shukaseich, something like that, right? What, how does it? Yeah, the Uyim Shabbat. So that pasuk is what Chazal were describing when they said Tavlu Mesa Tadu, that she has this inner desire to be with a husband. So that can never change because my separations never change. So the bonus soul didn't change. So that, and that's how Kadosh Baruch Hu made man and woman. Other chazakas that Chazal had were just what they noted about the time that they lived in. Those chazakas in Achinami can change. But again, here's a matter of potentially hashkafa that would have a tremendous impact in halacha in terms of the aguna crisis. I am sure that there are many, many more examples of the impact of hashkafa in halacha, but these are the ones that I was able to think of, and I think over the course of the three shiurim we had, it gives at least a bit of a broad view, you know, of without too many details, of the impact that hashkafa might have in certain circumstances on the halacha. Okay, have a great day and a great summer and everything else. Okay.